In a moment, we'll be talking with Norio Hayakawa about secret bases and about UFOs and exactly what might be happening on those bases. Stand by on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Norio Hayakawa calls himself an unorthodox ufologist and activist. He has spent almost 11-plus years investigating Area 51 in Nevada. He says that there is so much to that area than just the superficial facts made public about this well-known base. And here he is back on Coast to Coast with some incredible news that we're going to talk about tonight. Norio, thank you and welcome.
Thank you very much, George, once again for having me on your great show.
How did you get involved in investigating UFOs? How did that happen for you?
Actually, it was in 1961 that I earnestly began to take interest in UFOs. While I was in high school in 1961, I started joining organizations such as NICAP and APRO and so on, and began to subscribe to their newsletters at that time. But it was because when I was small, my father told me that he had seen some strange greenish ball of fire maneuvering over the Bay of Yokohama, Japan, in 1947. I believe that's what he said, in the summer of 1947, while fishing on the Bay of Yokohama, Japan, one summer night. He saw an incredibly beautiful greenish ball of fire, as if it was maneuvering intelligently over the bay. And he used to tell me and my mother about it while I was growing up. And so that's probably one of the reasons I was interested in UFOs, especially after I entered high school. And so, as I said, I have been in this research since 1961.
That's
a
long
time. 1964, George. What really catapulted my interest was an amazing news from a small town called Socorro, New Mexico, in 1964, the famous Socorro incident. And it was written up in a Japanese newspaper. It wasn't a headline news, but it was in the third or fourth page. But it clearly said that a police officer sees a saucer sitting on sand. And this was the famous Lonnie Samora incident.
Who passed away a couple of years ago, didn't he?
That's correct. And I had a chance to talk with Lonnie Samora briefly on the phone after I moved to New Mexico from California about 8 years ago. And I found him to be a very, very likable person and very, you know, a scholar and a gentleman and a scholar. And I firmly believe he exactly saw what he described that he saw.
It was an incredible case. And he even saw this craft take off, didn't he?
That's correct. He saw this craft, an oval-shaped object, with an insignia on top of it. And he saw it depart. And then a few minutes later, another police officer arrived and verified the smoking, the burning grass in the desert in that same spot that the object landed. So this was actually one of the most significant UFO incidents reported. And it was thoroughly investigated by Alan J. Hynek with the Air Force. And so I am convinced that this was a real incident and not a staged incident. You hear nowadays that this was all hoaxed by students of the college nearby. But there's no way. I'm sure that this was an authentic incident. And the question is, what did he see? Did he see an alien spacecraft, or did he see one of ours? And that's the big question.
Well, that is a good question. But he did see smaller alien-type figures, did he not?
Well, he never described these two small figures as alien. He simply described these two small figures as wearing some kind of a white coverall. And they were both touching the outside of the craft. And when they recognized that they were being observed about 400 feet away, then they went inside the craft, and the craft took off. But what's fascinating is that these two small figures were not extraordinary entities. Well, actually, Lonnie Zamora described them as normal-looking with coveralls. So the word alien never entered his mind.
Now, you are heading up a public information campaign on Area 51. We've got the Facebook link up at coasttocoastam.com. Tell me a little bit about your interest in Area 51, Norrie.
Well, that's true. I was recently assigned as the public information director of the largest Area 51 page on Facebook. And very frequently I post some interesting news about Area 51, and there's still plenty of things going on at this base in Nevada. In fact, they are expanding this facility, and recently we got word that a large hangar, a humongous hangar, or some kind of a structure, is being under construction, even right now, at the south end of the south ramp at Area 51. And nobody knows what the purpose of this humongous hangar is. And this hangar, by the way, is about four times larger than the largest hangar that was called Hangar 18. Actually, there is a Hangar 18 in Area 51 in the northern section of the facility, but that Hangar 18 is nothing compared to this humongous hangar. It's about four times larger than the Hangar 18. And so we don't know if it's a new kind of scoot and hide hangar shed storage. We don't know what it is. But one thing we know, George, is that Area 51 is active, very active, and, there's absolutely no truth to this crazy rumor that Area 51 had closed down and moved elsewhere. In fact, that's not the case. They are increasing in activity, and we can tell from the number of vehicles of the employees parked at Las Vegas McCarran Airport in the EG&G terminal. There are hundreds and hundreds of vehicles parked over there.
Most of the people on Area 51 are pretty hush-hush, Norrio. When are we going to really, beyond the Bob Lazars, when are we going to get some information out there?
Well, actually, slowly but surely, information can be obtained in the public domain if one really tries to go deep into that. Because, above all, it's not really a secret base in the sense that it is an open secret. And there are so much misconception about Area 51. In fact, the government finally admitted just recently that Area 51 exists by its name, even though
That's right.
They don't like to use the word Area 51, because Area 51 is really not an official name used by the Air Force, and the Air Force only uses the term an operating base near Groom Lake, which is ridiculous because it is not only near Groom Lake, it is on Groom Lake.
What do you think is happening there?
Well, it's basically a variety of things happening there, mainly development of new technologies such as newer forms of unmanned aerial vehicles and unmanned combat aerial vehicles and all other kind of platforms, remotely controlled and so on. And, well, the main reason is, according to the people who are involved, is, of course, for defense purposes, you know, development of new technologies. But we still don't know fully what the real bottom line is on Area 51.
Do you believe the stories that there's alien craft there, that they might be literally an alien there?
Well, it's hard to say because we don't have any definitive proof that Area 51 has anything to do with extraterrestrial technology. But, the very fact is that there are organizations that are made of former workers and, you know, former employees. They even say that they only know about, 5% of everything about Area 51. So it's really difficult to make a definitive statement. Anything is possible, and that's why I am very passionate about finding out, going deeper into this, because my passion is to find out about the truth about UFO phenomenon, which has actually fascinated me for many, many years, and I'm a really passionate guy because I want to get to the bottom of these things, not just about talk about these things, but get to the bottom of these things, and I haven't been able to completely. But over the years, I have come to the conclusion that we just have to deal with this these topics. It's a real topic. There's no topic more important than finding about the true nature of this real this UFO phenomenon and whether or not these so-called underground bases have anything to do with alien presence. And both Area 51 as well as my other favorite topic, the alleged Dulce underground base in New Mexico, are very dear to me, George, because these two bases, or one is alleged base, but the other one is an established base, Area 51. Mm-hmm. But these two topics really fascinated me, and it's really the summary of everything about UFO culture and beliefs.
What do we know about the underground bases in New Mexico?
Well, actually, there are underground levels in many of these New Mexico's facilities. For example, even Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque has, underground levels. I don't know how deep it is, but, it's a common sense that military bases have underground levels, especially places like Kirtland Air Force Base, which has had underground facility since 1947, in fact. There is a portion of Kirtland Air Force Base called the Manzano Base, where there had been a multi-leveled underground storage facility for sensitive equipment since 1947.
Why would they put everything underground, Norio?
Well,
why
of
not,
course.
Why not in hangars or big buildings above ground?
Well, they can, I guess. That's why hangars are important. Some of these hangars are called, scoot and hide hangars because they don't want the satellites to observe these aircraft or special access program craft. And they know what time the Russian satellites and other satellites pass over the facilities. So they created these hangars called, scoot and hide hangars just to protect their presence from spying satellites. But besides that, underground facilities are a very a practical way. You don't have to build hangars if there are underground facilities. So both are go hand in hand. And so I believe that there are underground facilities all over the United States military areas because it's common sense. But the big question is, are these underground facilities in all these locations, such as New Mexico, Nevada, California, and so on, Utah, are they actually connected? That's the big question.
Well, if they are, what does that tell you?
Well, if they are, that tells us that there is a conspiracy to hide something that we may not know anything about. So far, it's just speculation. Now, of course, there are underground levels in places like Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. It's common sense. Some of these technical areas in Los Alamos laboratories may be connected by underground tunnels. You know, Los Alamos itself is a pretty large area with many, many technical areas like 49 or 48. I don't know, but it's possible that they are connected underground. But to say that there is an underground connection between Los Alamos all the way to Nevada or even to Albuquerque,
that's a long way.
It's to me, it's a stretch. But, you know, anything is possible with our technology. And we had technologies to create large tunnels already back in the 1950s.
Well, a lot of people have heard these strange hums, Norio, so there's something going on.
Oh, yeah. There's these so-called low humming sound coming apparently from underground that's been heard in northern New Mexico even today, you know, nowadays. And not only in Taos areas, but these low-frequency hums have been reported. And just a couple of years ago, there was a report of a low humming sound coming from north of the Navajo River, north of Dulce, New Mexico. So, you know, we're talking about something that's very interesting. We don't know what's going on. Perhaps they may be, you know, tunneling underneath. Who knows? But the strange thing about all of this, George, is that when the Taos hums started, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, the Sandia laboratories were called to investigate. But as I often say, if you call Sandia laboratories for something, you know, investigate something, we have to investigate Sandia laboratories themselves to see if they could be the,
that's right,
the cause.
I mean, have we ruled out that these tunnels are being built by extraterrestrials? Stay with us, Norio. We'll check in with you on that when we come right back. Well, we're interactive, so next hour we'll take your phone calls with Norio Hayakawa as we talk about secret bases and UFOs and much more to talk with him about when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Norio Hayakawa with us. Norio, we cannot rule out the fact that these bases may have been built by extraterrestrials, can we?
No, we cannot rule out anything, George, and that's why I try to keep an open mind because we hear a lot of personal testimonies from respected people, you know, about witnessing an alien presence and so on. So I'm not a person, type of person to, you know, debunk any of these because we don't really know what reality is to begin with, because To one person, the concept of reality may be different, and maybe there may be some levels of reality to this world. So we are just bound by what we can see and feel and touch, and that's most of the people in the world. I like that. But there are people, I believe, that are able to go beyond the physical. And so that's why I don't like to debunk any of the allegations about, alien contact and so on. So I try to keep myself very open.
You are heading up a conference in New Mexico in October. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. On October the 4th, that's just about 4 weeks away, I am organizing the first time ever New Mexico UFO Conference in the city of Rio Rancho, New Mexico, right next to Albuquerque. And this is the first time ever for Rio Rancho to hold any kind of a UFO conference. And today we received an official recognition from the mayor of Rio Rancho, Greg Hull, who proclaimed October 4th as Rio Rancho's official UFO Research Day. And so we're excited about it. And, if you want to know more about this conference, you can just go to YouTube and look for New Mexico UFO Conference. All the details are in there on YouTube under New Mexico UFO Conference. And I'm so excited because we'll be talking about some interesting issues. We have a guest by the name of Greg Valdez, who is the middle son of the late Gabe Valdez, who was a New Mexico State Patrol officer in charge of Dulce, New Mexico, for many years. And then, of course, we have David Marler, who also lives in Rio Rancho, and he is an author of an interesting book called Triangular UFOs.
Yeah.
And then we have, Michael Schratt, who talks about military aerospace connection and also man-made UFOs. And then to top it off all, we have Travis Walton with his amazing experiences.
Great person. You know, we hear a lot of reports, Norio, of these triangular-shaped UFOs. They seem to be near military bases. Could we actually have something that big and hide it?
Well, it's very difficult to imagine. Because most of these triangular objects that people report, the triangular craft, are humongous, such as, football size or three times the football size or, humongous. And to me, it is virtually impossible physically to create that kind of a monstrosity and actually fly at even slow speeds, as many of these reports seem to indicate that these objects actually sometimes just hover or just go very slowly, like 5 or 10 miles an hour, so you can actually run with it. We have reports from Antelope Valley in California that people had seen these humongous triangular aircraft or craft over the highway, and they were just going so slowly that they could actually, run with it, and then making no noise. And so propulsion-wise, it's very difficult for me to comprehend that these are physical objects the exact same size that people report, unless we have a technology to actually deceive the observer and maybe incorporate some of the technology such as holographic projection image from the air, make the image larger. But we don't know.
What about the propulsion systems for these objects? You mentioned they go slow. They're very silent. Could they be anti-gravity?
They could be. Yes, they could be, but we don't know too much about anti-gravity technology. I mean, there's lots of talks about all of these, but when it comes to the, nuts and bolts, it's very difficult to come up with any evidence of this. So I am of the opinion that these things may not even be flying. And this is exactly the word, the description that Dr. Jacques Vallée describes. He believes that UFOs are not necessarily flying. They just materialize and disappear for some reason or other. And I'm also of the opinion that an object that huge cannot silently go slow over an airspace, over the city and so on. But again, we don't know for sure, you know.
It's something. People are seeing something, aren't they?
They are seeing something, because I believe the reports. And David Marler had interviewed a lot of people who have had sightings of a huge triangular-shaped craft over these years. And what's interesting is that these sightings of triangular craft have been going for ages. In fact, even as old as the 1800s, 1700s. So it's not something that just came up 20 or 30 years ago. So we are absolutely at a loss as to what these are. And so, but nevertheless, I continue to gather information. And, you know, if there's any kind of a report, I am the first person to post it on the Area 51 page on Facebook. In fact, George, today I just received a call from Hoyt Velarde, who was a former police chief in Dulcen, New Mexico, the very same guy that arrested me back in 1990. He called me and he said there's a lot of activity in Dulcen. There have been sightings, and he's still investigating the presence of Bigfoot in that area. So, you know, the very person that arrested me back in 1990 for asking questions about Dulce Base is now, you know, contacting me and calling me, and he wants to go with me to a location that he believes is could be the real Dulce Base.
Did he remember arresting you?
Oh, yeah, he did. But we became friends after the 2009 Dulce Base conference that I organized in Dulce. In March of 1990, and he remembered me, and you know, he at that time he said that the reason he detained us was because he was concerned about our safety. But anyway, it was during the time that he was employed as the chief of safety over there. So you know, now he retired, so he can say anything and he can discuss anything. So there's no question that there is something there in Dulce or right near Dulce. There is some kind of a base there, I'm convinced. Maybe it's not the humongous underground, humongous alien base of any kind, but it could be some kind of a covert off-site test facility for maybe some kind of new aircraft or craft and other things like, you know, biowarfare laboratory of some kind, not to the scale of, you know, humongous, you know, scale, but there could be something there, no question about it.
What's your gut tell you, Norio? What do you think's happening?
Well, what is happening is that these things are slowly surfacing. In other words, with the rise of the Internet and the tremendous, you know, ability of the people to gather information. Now, I'm not saying that everything you see on the Internet is true, you know, because many of the things on the Internet are disinformation and or misinformation, but occasionally you can actually find some real good information on the Internet, and that's what I try to do, and this is the reason why I posted this humongous photo of a humongous hangar that's being constructed as we speak right now on Area 51. So if you go to the Facebook page of Area 51, you will see the actual photo of this humongous hangar and, you know, other information.
It just boggles the mind, doesn't it?
It is. It does. And that's why I continue to investigate all these things, because it's incredible, you know, what may be there. But I'm of the opinion that anything that's there in Area 51 is probably 15 to 16 to 18 years ahead of what's been reported as far as technology-wise. You know.
Why New Mexico, Norio? What's so special about that area?
Well, New Mexico is very special, and of course, this is where I live now. I've been living here for 8 years, and I love this great state. It's the fifth largest state in the United States, in the Union. But yet, it only has a population of 2 million in the entire state, George, and it's so spacious that you can do anything. In fact, it's the most ideal location for the government to conduct any kind of a military, you know, testing, research, testing, and so on. And the strange thing is that everything seemed to have started right after World War II in 1945, at the conclusion of the war. Many people have no idea that hundreds and hundreds of German scientists from Germany came over here in a program called Operation Paperclip.
That's right.
And many of them were sent.
Too.
That's right. Many of them were sent south from Albuquerque to White Sands missile ranges, and they were the pillars of the, you know, the start of the America's rocket program and beyond. And what I mean by beyond is that it's very possible that the German scientists not only helped in America's rocketry, but possibly in other kinds of aircraft, such as, you know, prototypes of flying wing aircraft and so on. And also, many of these German scientists and engineers were transferred to Los Alamos Laboratory. So it's very important that we have to recognize that New Mexico is very closely related to the activities of German scientists that came here. And, you know, but what I like about New Mexico is that there are so many locations. New Mexico is not only about Roswell. You know, Roswell is just a minor a part of this whole story when it comes to UFOs in New Mexico. I mean, there were crashes allegedly in San Antonio, New Mexico, in 1945 in August. We still don't know the real truth behind it, but there was some kind of a crash over there in 1945, and then also another crash in 1947 in around July 3rd in the plains of San Agustin, which is southwest of Magdalena, right near the very large array, VLA facility in New Mexico. And most people have no idea about it. And most have no idea that on March 15th, 16th, and 17th of 1950, for 3 days in a row, every day around noontime, hundreds of Farmington, New Mexico residents witnessed hundreds of silver disc-shaped objects maneuvering in the sky over that town. And this is a fact, George. I visited Farmington, New Mexico, a few years ago, and I tried to interview some people that remember, may have remembered that sighting, you know, in Farmington. And I finally found a gentleman at a senior center who remembered that incident, and he described exactly as the newspaper described, seeing hundreds of silver disc-shaped objects just maneuvering in the sky. It's an amazing thing.
What could they have been?
Well, we have no idea. But fortunately, the Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds came up with an actual photo, a black and white photo of part of the sighting of Farmington. You can see about five or six disc-shaped objects. But he posted that, and I reposted that photo on my page and so on. But we don't know really what happened. You're talking about hundreds and hundreds of these silver disc-shaped metallic objects flying in formation during lunchtime, you know, for 3 days, March 15th, 16th, and 17th of 1950. And what happened was that a few days later, agents, governmental agents, arrived in Farmington and discussed these things with the residents. And I heard that many of the residents were told that not to discuss this thing with anyone, because you remember 1950 was the during the height of the Cold War, and people
and,
were very
and the Korean War.
That's right, and they were very sensitive. And when a government official come and tell you that don't discuss these things because it's a matter of national security, you know, most people obey. And you know, David Marler just visited Farmington yesterday, and he also got in touch with a firsthand witness to this 1950 mass sighting, and he verified that it was true.
Great story. How about any newspaper articles?
There's newspaper articles. The Farmington Daily Times had a front page article that a saucer armada invaded Farmington. And it was published on March 18th of 1950. And today, it's very difficult to find a copy of that newspaper. It was a one-inch thick headline, you know, on top. But it was also reported in L.A. Times, and I posted the L.A. Times article on it elsewhere in my site. But these are facts. We don't know really what happened, right near Farmington, there's a small town of Aztec, and over there in 1948, allegedly something crashed outside. And then, of course, George, you mentioned the Socorro incident of April 24, 1964.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that that very same day, April 24, 1964, some people alleged that a UFO incident took place at Holloman Air Force Base on that very same day, April 24, 1964, and some say that some kind of a exchange was made between the Air Force, the government, and some kind of a unknown, entities.
This Farmington UFO case is fascinating to me.
Fascinating, and we should actually keep these incidents and publicize these incidents before they are forgotten, because most people have no idea that a massive UFO sighting took place in 1950 in Farmington that is much, much more significant and larger in scope than the so-called Phoenix Lights of 1997.
That's a good point. Noria, hold on. We're going to take this quick break. We'll come back and we'll take some phone calls and talk more about your work, UFOs, and secret bases.